This is A Coastal Story, written and presented by Charlie Connolly. In June 1895, a small wooden box washed up on the shore of one of the Scalloway Isles in Western Shetland, attached by a rope to what appeared to be an inflated sheep's bladder for buoyancy. There was a hatch at the centre of the box sealed with pitch. The words, "St Kilda Mail, please open," had been burned into the wood. When opened, it was found to contain a tin, inside which were 11 letters, 4 addressed to Glasgow, 3 for the Isle of Harris, 2 for England, 1 for Ferne, north of Inverness, and 1 for the Isle of Skye. A jar contained coins amounting to exactly the correct postage. There was a note too, addressed to whoever found the canister. Dated the 1st of March, 3 months earlier, and signed Finlay Gillis, the canister had come from St Kilda, the remote archipelago in the North Atlantic, some 40 miles west of the Western Isles of Scotland, and 300 miles west of where this canister washed up. "We are all well and busy, each one at his own occupation," wrote Gillis. "We had stormy weather during the winter months, and there have been no births, no deaths, and no marriages to record." The St Kilda Archipelago, with a population of somewhere around 80 at the time, all living in a long row of cottages looking out across Village Bay on Heerta, the largest of the islands, was effectively cut off from the world for 9 months every year. The odd steamer would call during the summer, bringing curious sightseers, and fishing boats would sometimes put in. But other than that, St Kilda heard from nobody, and nobody heard from St Kilda. For 3 seasons out of every 4, this was the loneliest place in the world. Outside the few weeks when they could half expect visitors, what was known as the St Kilda Mail Boat was the islanders' only way of contacting the outside world. It was a Scottish journalist named John Sands who devised the St Kilda Mail Boat. He was living on Heerta for the winter of 1876-77 and was there on the 17th of January when a lifeboat containing 9 Austrian seamen rowed into the bay. They'd been on their way from Glasgow to New York on a barque called the Petty Dubrovatsky when it capsized in bad weather some 10 miles west of St Kilda. 7 crewmen had been lost. The remaining 9 made it to Heerta. They arrived during a hard winter, and provisions were scarce. But the islanders took the shipwrecked mariners into their homes and shared what they had. The food, the beds, even their clothes. The sailors were understandably anxious to get home, or at least get word back to their families they were alive. But when told it could be 6 months before the island saw another living soul, they grew very despondent indeed. John Sands had noticed the islanders using cane washed up on the shore to make reeds for their looms, and had already wondered whether the same current that brought it across the Atlantic from the tropics might be harnessed to send messages to the Western Isles, as long as they could make watertight containers robust enough for the journey. He'd already made a small wooden boat to try out his theory, but here was a cast-iron emergency for which such a service could have been devised. A note was written, placed in a bottle and sealed inside Sands' little boat. "St Kilda, January the 22nd, 1877," it began. The Petty Dubrovatsky of Austria was lost near this island on the 17th inst. The captain and 8 of the crew are in St Kilda and have no means of getting off. Provisions are scarce. Written by Jay Sands, who came to the island in the summer and cannot get away. The finder will much oblige by forwarding this letter to the Austrian consul in Glasgow. It was a week before the wind turned to the northwest and the first St Kilda mailboat could be launched. A lifebuoy from the lost ship was also sent out with the same message tied to it in a bottle. The lifebuoy washed up at Orkney, Sands's boat at Pooleau in the Scottish Highlands. A lull in the weather meant that on the 22nd of February, barely 3 weeks after the messages were cast upon the waves, a Royal Navy ship anchored off Village Bay and the Austrians were saved. Equally importantly, some much-needed provisions were left with the islanders to help them get through to the spring. And thus the St Kilda mailboat was born. It was surprisingly efficient too. Something like 4 out of 5 would be found over the years, and their letters and messages passed on. In 1905, the St Kilda Mail reached the island of Lewis in just 2 days. Sometimes, the boats would even wash up on the coast of Norway. The letters would have chronicled how life for the islanders became increasingly hard. Tourists brought glimpses of a life much less arduous than on those wind-blasted rocks way out in the North Atlantic. They also brought germs. A flu outbreak in 1926 killed some of the men, and a series of crop failures during the 1920s led to intense hardship. By 1930, there were just 36 people left, and life had become almost impossible. The remaining residents asked to be taken off, and they were evacuated at the end of August that year, bringing to an end 2 millennia of continuous habitation on St Kilda. If 4 out of 5 St Kilda mailboats made it, I like to wonder what happened to the ones that didn't. The ones that were carried past the Western Isles, past Scotland, and missed even a coastline as massive as Norway's. I like to think they're still out there somewhere. Trapped in Arctic ice, maybe. Or bobbing around a remote part of the Southern Ocean. Sun-bleached. Still watertight more than a century on. A tin sliding around inside. Coins rattling in a jar. Letters unread and unopened, carrying news of marriages, of newborns, of burials. Trusting they find the recipient well, that the Guernsey sent during the summer was warm enough, and that the work was good on the mainland. And what news of a wife? And grandchildren, maybe. Thin paper still tinged with the smell of peat smoke, and infused with hope and the ache of separation. The words and the people they address, immortal now, out there in the dark and in the sun, as the St Kilda mail still waits to be delivered. That was a coastal story. I'm Charlie Connolly, and last time out I mentioned that I'd started a page on the new online bookshop.org, which supports independent booksellers, timely as the ones in England are currently closed. Well, now, rather than just shilling my own books in a crass and frankly vulgar fashion, I've made a list of some of my favourite books about the sea. The kind of books that inspired me to start Coastal Stories, in fact. I'll add a link in the notes accompanying this episode. Thank you to everyone who's donated to the Ko-fi page this week. You're all lovely, and you know who you are. In fact, this is the first episode recorded using the fancy proper microphone stand I bought from the funds you've kindly stumped up. I know. Glamorous. It's ko-fi.com/coastalstories if you're enjoying these little nuggets of maritime solace and fancy standing me a pint. Or at least the price of a pint. Again, I'll put a link in the episode notes. You can track me down on Twitter at Charlie Connolly and on the Facebook page, Coastal Stories Podcast, where, among other things, you'll find a nice photo of me recording these very waves. It's a nice photo of me because in it, I am a very long way away. These very waves were recorded on an ebb tide in glorious sunshine on the afternoon of Thursday, the 12th of November, 2020.